Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing, folks? Welcome to another edition of the Local Voter Education, done for you here every Sunday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Central Time. This is also going to be found at fwdistrict5.com in addition to Blog Talk Radio if you need to find this podcast at all. My name is James H. McBride. I'll be your host for this evening. Riding shotgun with me, as always, is Bob Willoughby. How you doing this evening, Bob?
I'm doing the same. I'm still doing as good as ever, the same. So I'm still hanging in there.
Good. I know we don't have a – well, we have a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, but it's going to be citizen presentations. So there's nothing on the agenda to talk about. But before we bring our guest on, I know you might want to say something about reaching out to his opponent.
Yeah, I reached out to Mr. – I believe his name is Wilder. And see if he want to come on the show. Anytime we have one party on, one the counterpart on, I like to, you know, offer to everybody that's involved into that. So, but I did reach out to him, and he did get back to me quickly. He's not available to come on this month or right now. And we did have a long conversation, and he gave me some information there. I got to say, anytime a candidate will reach back to us, we're so happy that that happens. That gives them a big plus, because we have so many candidates that won't even give you the time of day. They get elected by not reaching out to you is their strategy, and it works for a lot of them, I'm afraid. But anyway, not saying one thing I know. But we did offer, if he does make it past the primaries or the primaries here, that we'll have whoever is our running for our district come back on afterwards. But anyway, we'll give a shout out that he did give a call back. He did return a call and spend some time talking to us. And then we have Larry Mike on tonight. That's running for the same seat as Republican. And you have I'm not very prepared here. I've had a very busy day here. I just got in here just a while ago and got this thing on. But anyway. That about covers that for me, James.
Sure. And do we have our guest on the line right now to where I can talk a little bit about it before we bring him on?
Sure. I believe we got him on. We can bring him right on now. Let's see. 6995. Is that you, Larry?
That's me.
All right, Larry. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. Doing good.
Okay. Well, this is the part where I get the bag good out and let James do all the work. I can take it easy here for a minute, so I'll let James take over.
Yeah, I want to remind everybody that if they want to call into the show and they have a question or comment for our guest, they can call into 515-602-9610, press 1 to get into queue. Also, too, I want to remind everybody that if they want to find more about our guest, they can go to LarryMike.com. Larry, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. I'm blessed to see another Sunday, so that's always good for me.
Well, good. That's great to hear. I was wondering if you could just introduce yourself to the people out there real quick.
Yeah, thank you. First, I'd like to thank you for just giving me the opportunity to be here and talk to you guys tonight. I think it's always a blessing when you're able to tell people about what you are running for and then who you are. My name is Larry Mike. I am an Air Force veteran, served in the Air Force for 10 years, 4 months, 28 days. I wasn't counting, so don't take that against me. I used to be a former special agent trained down at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, and now I am a lawyer here in Tarrant County doing family law. It is a great job where you get to help the parents and protect some rights and see some good pluses with the kids. But I decided to step in and run for this position here where many people have said I was crazy to run against a 27-year incumbent. But there are some needs that need to be met that I don't believe are being met. I will give the incumbent some credit in laying the foundation for Tarrant County that we have needed throughout the years. But for me, I want to take that further and bring us from the 20th century into the 21st century. So that's the big crux of why I'm running in this race.
Well, Larry,
I know that whenever somebody challenges an incumbent, like you said, there's got to be something unsettled with what they're doing in policy or changes you want to make. I know one of the things you're big about is term limits, but I want to hold off on that a little bit. But could you talk about the rest of what you believe needs to be changed?
Yeah, so the number one thing that I want to focus on is innovation. Right now, the county is using a system that is based on MS-DOS. And if you're familiar with MS-DOS, created by Microsoft, it was created back in, 1981, when Ronald Reagan was president. And we are still using a variation of that to this day. Now, I will tell you that the incumbent came into office in 1995 when I was 17 years old. I'll be 44 this year. And when he first came into office, I mean, the Internet was just getting started. I think the first time I ever actually used the AOL, when AOL was around, I think was 1996 at my first duty station. So he brought us into, I would say, the digital age. But since we've been brought into the digital age, we haven't progressed any further. And there's that roadblock there with this system. So I like to give an analogy when I do talk about this system. You know, just, I mean, if we can envision like a 1980s Cadillac, right? It drives, gets you from point A to point B. You take it into the mechanic, and the mechanic says, hey, yeah, it works. It's, you know, it does what it needs to do. But you pay for this car every year, and you pay a monthly fee to use this car. With me, you have an option to have a 2022 Cadillac where, yes, you're going to pay for it every year, but you don't pay a monthly fee for it. It gets you from point A to point B, but it comes with the technology that you're used to for today. If you want to use MacBook, Android, iOS, all the other things that are equivalent for today's technology, you can. So that's one big component, and I think that's a fundamental difference in what I'm wanting to do and what the incumbent is doing. Every time I talk about bringing in new technology, he'll say, well, 12 years ago we explored that and we found 150 security vulnerabilities, so it's no good. But if you guys know, in 12 years, things can change drastically with technology. 12 years ago, there was no such thing called coronavirus or flu-rona or Omicron or Delta, and that's how quick things can change. I mean, 12 years ago, they didn't have folding phones, and I've got a folding phone now. So the thought process of, well, we tried it before, and it didn't work then, and it's not going to work now, I don't think serves in the best interest of the taxpayers. The second thing are policies. What I believe as elected officials is that any policy that you make, it should adhere to the Constitution, meaning it shouldn't intrude on any of your rights. So you've got God-given rights, and the Constitution, the limiting document, limits the government's power to intrude on those rights. So one policy that I've heard over and over again that just boggles my mind, right, is this policy of charging the taxpayers to use a system to check public records. Now, the argument on the other side is, well, you shouldn't get things for free. Taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for it. But my argument is the taxpayers have already paid for it. When we pay our taxes and our property taxes and we go and we fund the government, we've not only paid the salaries, maintenance, upkeep, the buildings, but we paid for the platform that houses the records that we have the right to access and see. So to go and put an additional charge on something that you've already paid for, I believe is an infringement on our rights. No reason that the government should go in and dig into your pocket a second time for something that you've already paid for. You know, years ago, there was a group in Boston who got upset because someone hiked up the price of tea, and they had a tea party. And so for some reason along these lines, we just let it go because we're like, oh, it's a menial amount. But it's a bad policy, and it affects the citizens. You see, there's another policy of the leave policy that I've heard about. the county only buys back 400 hours of leave when people are retiring from the county. The policy at this office is that the employees are only allowed to take 7 days per quarter. There are four quarters in a year, so that leaves them with only 28 days to take leave. The downside is you can accrue more leave than you're able to take based on this policy. So when it comes time for you to retire, if the county's only buying back 400 hours and you have 1,000 hours, you have lost 600 hours of leave that you legitimately earned, leave that you weren't able to take because of a policy. Now, I was in the military and, you know, we dealt with life and death situations. We dealt with things that could affect national security. If we were able to take our leave and our superior said, you need to take this leave or you're going to lose it, there should be no reason why we can't do the same with county government. So that's just a few of the things that have stuck out that I just, you know, I just can't agree with and I think needs to be changed.
Now, Larry, is this your first time to run for office?
Yes, sir. And I will tell you, I never had any intentions on running for any office ever in my life. I was fine just living the American dream.
With the incumbent power you're going up against, what is your plan to get your message out to the people?
Oh, so I will tell you that there is a large underground movement. There are folks who come up to me and send me emails or call me on the phone and say, hey, I'm supporting you. And I had no idea that they were supporting. I've got people asking consistently about signs and push cards. And like right now, I've ran out of signs. I've had 700 signs, and they're all gone. I've had to order more. It's a good problem to have for me, right? Because it's like David and Goliath. I'm this underdog, and we thought that we prepared for a certain amount, but then now it's like, we didn't prepare for this type of movement. As far as what I'm doing, so I'm a military guy, right? And you'll see I'm about to jump around this question, and then I answer it directly for a reason. Military, we always do strategy, and I'm real big on doing a type of strategy that you don't know what's about to come. So I think the best way I can answer that is there are some things that are about to come that once you see them, then you'll know exactly what we're doing. If that's okay to answer it that way.
Sure, that's fine with me. So you could say that fundraising is going well for you right now?
Yes, fundraising is actually really good for us. I know that the incumbent has never had someone like me run against him. You know, I think the closest someone has ever raised against him may have been $534. I've got more of my own personal money than that in here. I think right now for our campaign, with everything that has been spent and collected and in-kind donations, we're looking around like 35-ish, 35K. So for me, you know, a political neophyte who's new on the scene, who is not in with the cool kids, and I'm an outsider, I think it speaks well to how much people want some good change in this county.
Well, I wouldn't say you're really new on the scene. You are a practicing family law attorney here in the county. Have been named one of the top ones by Fort Worth Magazine, I do believe. Do you think that your work as a lawyer has taught you what you need to go on to do what the county needs to become better, or has it just been something that's been a passion of yours and you've been researching on your own?
You know, being a lawyer, I think, has some aspect to it. But I would say my military career previously had a lot to do with it. Now, there's some things that I don't mention, like in between, right? I did probation and parole for a little bit, and then I was an associate director of business development for a medical education company working in their international division, where, you know, we went from a few hundred thousand a year to 1.2, 1.5 million in sales overseas. But the military aspect actually really taught me about leadership, you know, what true leadership means under times of significant stress and then times where there's peace. I had the opportunity to, you know, lead drug teams during investigations, lead counterintelligence teams while deployed overseas, handling top secret classified information that if it was released, it would harm the United States of America. And then, of course, during a lot of my stint in the military, I had the opportunity to train thousands upon thousands of new airmen coming in to learn how to be law enforcement and, of course, learning how to fight in times of war. So I think that training was key in understanding that when you're managing or leading people, you have to have a certain mindset when it comes to operating the organization. Yes, there are deadlines and there are things to take care of and there's monetary fees and budgets and all of that. But ultimately, the person who is there, you lay down the policy of how things should go. And for me, it's being a true servant leader to the people. Whereas, you know, I'm not the one who knows everything. So the military taught me that they broke us down from individuals and trained us up to be members of a team. So for me, I think an effective leader in the way that I would like to run and what I've learned is that you surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, who are experts in things, and who will challenge you and hold your feet to the fire. And if you have an idea and they say it's a horrible idea, they tell you it's horrible, and they tell you a better idea will effectively help the organization. So, I think the military has been key to that. The law stuff, you know, it's allowed me to interface with people and deal with people in difficult times of stress and also, you know, understand the nuances of the courts. My leadership aspect, the military is just hands down. I'm grateful for that.
Now, you are a veteran that was deployed to the Middle East. Do you just want to talk about your deployment and what that was like, what you experienced a little bit, what you can talk about, if you can talk about it?
Yeah, it's you know, it's been past the 10-year time frame. I was in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. We went to Saudi. I was stationed in Riyadh. And we were the military intelligence unit there. So we traveled all around the desert, flying on civilian aircraft or driving where we needed to go. During that time frame, when the Iraq war was still going on, a lot of the insurgents were coming up through Saudi Arabia, through that corridor. So it was working to identify certain key elements to ensure that we help out what's going on up there in the hot zone. We've interfaced with the embassy a lot. So there was an embassy in Riyadh. And one of the cool things about the embassy, right, is there are people there that you would never expect to be there because, you know, just certain agencies where you're like, what are you guys doing here? But to see how every component worked and how we could interface as well. There was, I like to tell people about some of the, well, I don't know if I can reveal that. Let me just backtrack. So there was one place where we went to. It was called Khamis Mushay. It was down towards the border of Yemen. And Khamis Mushay, if you are familiar with the 911 hijackers, the majority of the hijackers came from Khamis Mushay. And it was it was very interesting going there. It was almost like you went back in time. And for me, and a few of all, I think it was three of us, and my linguist, he was a Sudanese guy. We wore the thobe and guchib, the, you know, I guess for us in America, it's like that white, looks like the man dress, and then the scarf that goes over your head. So we wore that around to blend in. And for me and my linguist did a lot of the talking with the commoners there, the people who didn't have the wasta, the power. And so it's just accustomed to that. If you know, someone is above you, they're not going to speak to you. So I played that quote-unquote role where my thobe and guchib was very nicely tailored. He would talk to folks, and then I'd talk to whoever had the power. And a lot of those guys, they could speak English. But there was one time where he and I, we were driving. We rented this Toyota Camry, balding tires. The back window had like the tent that was bubbling, so it was very difficult to see. And it was a stick shift. So I'm driving this stick shift down there, and I take this wrong turn, and it was a dead end. And there were these military vehicles, these Jeeps. And of course, you know, they're AK-47s, and they're just there kitted out. And I'm like, oh, okay, wrong turn. And so I turn around. Now, me and my linguist, we're dressed up in the garb. And we turn around, we're heading back, and next thing you know, here come these Jeeps. And they cut us off and almost run us off the road, and then they come with the AKs just pointed. And they're just, you know, they're screaming in Arabic. And I'll tell you, I can't speak a lick of it. You know, I'm just like, what's going on? And then my linguist, the one time that I really needed him to really start translating and telling me what's going on, he's just going back and forth. And I'm like, dude, what is going on? And then they search us and they pull my passports. And at the time I had these cards that identified the U.S. military training mission that we were working on. But it was in all the Arabic, and one of the cards had the guns that I was authorized to carry, you know, my M4 and my 9mm, but we didn't have them there. So then they were, like, searching the vehicle for these guns until my linguist, I guess, finally, when I'm yelling in American, like, what is going on, tell me, then he lets them know I'm an American guy. So, yeah, it was crazy experience, but fun times.
It sounds like it. You know, I don't know if you could really answer this question straight for me or not, but one of the things that's always amazed me about over there is you have the Houthis, who are some of the poorest people on earth, but they're still able to get these missiles. Where in the world do they get these missiles from?
Probably the same place where some of these other folks get the M4s and the helicopters and all that other stuff.
Okay, I understand. I understand. Now, I want to get into, like you said, term limits is something you're very big on. Something I am a very big supporter of is term limits. I believe you should have term limits. I know Bob will probably want to come in here and say something, but before Bob comes in, I'll let him respond after you talk about that. But you just want to talk about term limits for a little bit?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I have this theory that this country, right, and I believe it. No one can convince me otherwise that this is not the greatest country on the earth. There's so many things that we have that other countries wish they had. You know, I've been all around the world in several different countries and seen true working poor that were there. You know, people living in huts and not having any running water, right? And I mean, we are blessed here. But at this time, there's a divide. There's a divide going on where things are so divisive. And I can't attribute it to the people, right? I attribute it to career politicians. I think that career politicians are the reason why the country is has the issues that we do right now. Because a career politician no longer serves the interest of the people. They serve their own interest. And a lot of times they are bought and paid for by, political action committees or certain lobbyist groups, the corporations or whoever, right? And so any decision that they make when it comes to voting on something or pushing something, it's always with their interest in mind and not the people who matter, which is us. So I think term limits themselves is necessary to not only help eliminate someone who has gained so much political capital and such a huge war chest that it's insurmountable for a grassroots candidate to come in and try to challenge. If you implement term limits, then it keeps things fresh, right? Someone who stays in office for 2-3 decades, I mean, how much are they going to keep things fresh? They're going to get to a point where they're not going to want to listen to anybody else's ideas. If you challenge them on anything, you're wrong because they got the power. So they're going to do what they want to do and serve their own interests. But having fresh blood come in there, having people with new ideas, people who aren't tainted, who are just true grassroots and just want to get in there and serve, it will enable the good change that we need. Even the Republican Party platform, the Texas Republican Party platform, number 76, talks about term limits, that they support 12 years for federal and state offices. But we've got politicians who, they're just busting that. The guy I'm running against, he's 80 and he's like twice that. And, I think that's why we have certain issues, is because they're serving themselves and they're not serving the people.
Do you see problems with the incumbent in there where that is a problem at this point right now?
I do. Because, it's, and granted, look, I was known as a family law attorney and coming into this whole political arena. But as soon as I came in, he had locked up pretty much every endorsement by the incumbents that you can think of, right? So from the get-go, it's like everybody that he'd locked up. It's rather easy when they're your colleagues, you've supported them financially in their campaigns, and you've helped, hoorah for them in their campaign. So it's inevitable. I was told when I decided to run that I was crazy. We don't run against incumbents. You're going against the godfather, the kingmaker. Like, this guy has all the clout and you are crazy to go against him. To hear that, I heard that and I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to be crazy, because you're not going to tell me what I can and can't do. In the Constitution, it doesn't say I can't do that, so I'm going to do what I want to do. But to hear that, to know that someone has gained that much clout, and mind you, we're not talking about the governor of Texas, right? We're not talking about the president or anyone who is in one of those positions where you consider like these are like powerful positions. We're talking about the district clerk position. And, I walk around and people are like, district clerk, what does that do? I didn't even know that was an elected position. I thought that was something that just, somebody just get hired into it. So for someone to have that much political power and clout, it boggles my mind. It shouldn't be that way. And that tells me right there that, man, something needs to change with this system. The entire system. It just needs to change and get back to what our founding fathers wanted. They wanted people to go in there and serve and be statesmen and stateswomen, not career politicians. That shouldn't even be a word. But people are going in there and, getting great pensions and living fat and rich off of the taxpayers. It's ridiculous.
Well, you speak about, we have a lot of turmoil going on right now. Just to talk a little bit, using your military mind with what you can, What is your assessment of the situation that's going on with us as a country right now?
You know, we have grandstanding on both sides, right? On the blue side and the red side, there's this grandstanding, and they're using whatever they can to throw political fodder or to throw, like, the next great thing for media, for the news. And then you've got the media that is playing into it, and, you know, they'll latch onto something and then make it this big brouhaha for people just to get all up in arms and to get emotional about it. The thing that's really hurting us is the divisiveness, that divisive rhetoric that just runs around, right? People just, for some reason, want to be jerks to each other. And I get it. You know, I hear people say, oh, well, we can own the libs, or we can own the conservatives, or what can we do to throw that next shot to mudsling? And it makes them feel good. But I read this book by Arthur C. Brooks called Love Your Enemies. And he talked about how to overcome what is going on in this country. And he used the biblical analysis, right, that, you know, the greatest thing is love. As cheesy as it sounds, it's love. Love your enemies. Love your neighbors. You know, what we have to get back to is what I remember when I was in the military. I was on the grenade range training these students, and we heard, hey, a plane went into the World Trade Center, and we just thought, okay, pilot error, that's horrible. But then we hear a second plane hit, and everybody was like, they're coming. And it was, we thought we were, you know, going to war. Somebody's attacking us. And the days and weeks after that, that America, you know, the unity, like, there was no black and white and man or woman, and it was none of that. It was pure, unified country who recognized that someone decided to come and attack our sovereign homeland. And we united against that. And everybody was like, who was it? We want him. We want to go get him. And for some reason, we've forgotten that. Like, we've let that go into the wayside and just let all this divisiveness come into play. But during those times, I mean, the love of our country, the love of that flag, like, the flag wasn't called racist. People weren't running around saying cops were racist and, you know, just because you believed one thing, you were racist. None of that. Like, we were pure Americans. And somehow we've got to get back to that. Like, even though we may not agree with everything, the people that I'm encountering now, I try to tell them, look, strip away all of that. At the end of the day, we both have the same issues. Taxes are high. We can recognize taxes are high. We got to do something about it. We can recognize that we've got career politicians in who aren't serving our best interests. We can work together. And, you know, for me, it's breaking everything down, stripping all the craziness away, and just focusing on the fact that we're Americans, and our issues are our own issues, and unless we work together, we will never solve them.
Larry, I can agree with you. One of the biggest things that people call in here and they talk about is their taxes. As district clerk, is there anything you can do to help people with taxes? And if you can't, do you think this is a problem that needs to be solved at the state level or the local level?
Oh, I think the state level. You know, as for the district clerk, I mean, you collect these fees, right? But then, of course, your taxes pay for the government. I think the one thing that we can do is we can stop double dipping into the taxpayer's pocket when they want to access records that they have the right to access. You know, if Collin County is able to do that, why can't we do it? If Dallas can do it, why can't we do it? If Bexar County, if Harris County, if all these other counties can do it, why can't we do it? Why are we the county who people say it's the last bastion, right? The last hold, the last stronghold. If we fall, then Texas falls, then America falls, right? If we're that county, why can't we serve our citizens better? Why are we double dipping into their pockets? Now, as far as the county government, yes, they're, I think that is where you can get a major change. Now, I've been following the county judge race, you know. There's Tim O'Hare, there's Betsy Price, Robert Trevor Bucher, and I think Byron Bradford, and this Kristen Collins, who no one has, I don't think anyone has ever seen her face. She's just an anomaly. But, you know, several of them have talked about property taxes and plans that they want to bring into place to help bring them down. And, you know, considering that, yeah, Tarrant County is like super high in Texas. Those are key people who can get it done. Whoever gets into office, right? We've got to hold their feet to the fire to ensure that what they said is not just a campaign promise or campaign rhetoric, that they're actually going to do something to get these taxes down. And, of course, when you bring down the taxes, it affects everything else throughout the county with the budgets and all of that. So I think for everyone, we have to be keen on whatever budgets we put in place, that we are as fiscally conservative, if not more, when it comes to that time.
Another item we have a lot of rumblings from citizens about is the Panther Island project. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to share on that?
You know, I'll tell you, I don't know a lot about it, but what I heard about with the nepotism and, you know, the favors and all of that, you know, that's that whole good old boy type of thing, right, that we hear about in politics, where you scratch my back, I scratch your back. Where, you know, we can put in family members to allow family members to get paid on certain things. That is the epitome of what people think about when they think of dirty politics. And it's things like that that tend to turn people off. So as far as that whole debacle, it should have never happened, in my opinion. I think a lot of that was a lot of self-serving and not serving the people. So however they handle that. I know if I'm in office, we're going to be transparent every step of the way, and we're just going to serve the people.
If you are elected to your office, would you call for an audit of your office?
Yes, guaranteed. Not only would I call for an audit of my office, I'd also go in front of the county commissioners and tell them that they need to reduce the pay of the district clerk himself. Because I think the clerk gets paid too much. There's no reason why the district clerk should get paid more than the governor of Texas. Like, just think about that for a moment. A district clerk gets paid more than the governor of Texas. Boggles my mind. So that's one of the first things
I'll get elected.
Yes.
Could I ask for a role, please?
Bob, you want to come in here? You got something you want to talk about?
Yeah, we can go back. I like what he's saying. I like a lot of this stuff here. And he's on the same topics that I'm on, too, because I did open records right now. I'm doing one on the Police Oversight Committee they put in for us, which is like a big scam. It has no power. The officers' names don't even get mentioned. They don't even have to show up, nothing. It has no power whatsoever. We brought in a person from out of state, and she's getting $182,000, and Catherine Huckabee's getting another $110,000, and I went to open records to ask how many people are working. I asked for a complete, how many of the names, photos of her own record, and how much is their salary that are working for the Police Oversight Committee, and also the public communications engagement, which Michelle Gook is the director of, gets $150,000 a year, which is three times more than the average officer. So that's ridiculous, too. And she doesn't engage. She doesn't return calls. And so I asked how many people work in that department, too. So we got all the departments where people are making it. And you mentioned that the clerk gets more money than the governor. I would never, you know, there's just so many when I got started, there's just no end to issues and things, so you have to let a lot of things go and stay focused on a few things and try to get something done. But the thing back to, like, and I think that the route to getting anything done is going to be like term limits and I think campaign contribution limits to get rid of to cut the clip with the police association. And that's what I wanted to ask you. Larry, here's a hard one. Are you taking any money from the police association? Are they giving you any money?
No.
Oh, okay. No. Even if they did, you know, I'd say, okay, this time, but next time you're going to be in trouble with us, okay? So, but anyway,
yeah,
that's
no,
who
I
we're trying to
take any.
No money from them. Okay, that's good, because I've got two signs going right now or going out on anybody but Ramirez there that's running Manny. So is here next week I'm putting up a couple pretty good-sized signs on him, anybody but him. But these are the kind of things we need to get out of our politics and stuff. But I have a plan like you do in the in the military and stuff, and a strategy and all that laid out. And what I was working on was here at Fort Worth to – you need to get more people involved to do anything right now. We're kind of stalemated with the government's got just about the right amount of people voting their way. And we got about 900,000 in Fort Worth don't have a clue what's going on. So somewhere out of that 900,000, if we can incorporate 3 or 4% to wake up and get involved, and that's by letting them know, we're liable to get that out of there. But to reach those people, I don't have Trump's money. And my route was at city council speaking. And then I found out that we were on the bottom of the agenda with all the surrounding cities were at the top of the agenda. Austin, Denton, their part was on the top and Fort Worth was on the bottom. Like everything else, you know, we're really on the bottom of everything. So, and it would take 2 minutes to put us on top. So as soon as Maddie got in office, I requested right away to move us to the top because I wanted to find out, is she going to be for real? I didn't think she would be. With $2 million buying her, I didn't have any hope of her being real, but I like to give a person, you know, the benefit of the doubt first. So I asked right away, put that at the top. It wouldn't take 2 minutes to do it, and it'd be the right thing to do. You know, you look around, there's no argument not to. Everybody has it on top, it's the right thing to do. Well, they took them 5 months, and then they rearranged the whole scheduling and took us off the, instead of moving us to the top, they took us completely off. So, I mean, yeah. I've really been jumping up and down about that completely. And we used to have 12 minutes a month to talk at city council. Now we only have 6 minutes. And those were just those 3 minutes divided each time, but only with council and quarantine. They took us away from everybody else so that we only talked to the crooks that we were talking about. So, but anyway, we need to get, and also they moved our council time from 7 o'clock to 6 o'clock so that you get the pleasure of fighting 5 o'clock traffic to get there also. All this is like war strategy. Everything in our whole city's things like war stuff. The first thing you take out is the eyes and ears. That's what you take out when you go into war with it. Well, they took away all of our, that was the last of our independent government access of expressing any kind of problem. That was the last. We used to have on Channel 190, you used to have the Women Lead of Voters. You had independent shows on there, and they kicked all that off there, made it all government. So they can take away everything. Mm. So this is what I'm fighting back for is to I know I'm going on and on here, but I think it's so important to try to get everybody involved in one thing. Get our right back to speak at city council at 7 o'clock because when you get your public presentation on at that time, you're on before zoning. People are tuning in that don't tune in to city council because they got a problem. That's when you get seen. And the more those people get noted, you can start growing from that. And they know that, and they don't want us there. They don't dare let us in that spot, but they have their presentation there. So, but anyway, I kind of get off on that because I'm spending a lot of money each month running ads in the Fort Worth Weekly. We have another one coming out this month, Wednesday. We do one the first week of the month, and but that's not going to last too long on my income. But I want to get my right back to speak, so I'm kind of panicking. We did get some help from some veterans, gave us some money, and I have a business that jumped on board. And also we're thinking, we're working and trying to find, if we could just find 8 more businesses to, like the one I've got right now, he's giving me a check every month now, $100 charge it. If we can get 8 more out of 1 million people, if we just get 8 more businesses to give $100 a month, I put 200 in. I'll match that with 200, be 1,000, get a full-page ad, and run one each month between now and election time. And these people will get a lot of them out of office, I think. I mean, they threatened to sue me for doing this, and I'm still waiting. So I think I touched a nerve here. I'll let it get going forward. But let's see, what other question I had to get off here? Okay. Have you, by any chance, have you gone back and looked to see how many people have voted? What's the numbers that vote for district clerk? You looked at the past races, see what kind of numbers you need to win?
Yeah, so 2018, Frank Palladino got, I want to say, around 17,000. Wilder got an overwhelming majority, I believe, of 73,000 or so.
Okay, so we got almost 100,000 people voting then for a district.
And
wow, 73,000. Wow.
Yeah, but I think this year it's gonna be a little different.
Well, that's yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are up for change, and there's always a time, you know, things start changing, you know, and change is good. But that was one of the questions I had there. And have you looked at have you looked at your Wilder's? You said he got endorsements from everybody. Did you see where he's taking money from the Police Association or the firefighters? Are they giving him anything, or did you notice?
No. The bulk of his money came from the 27 years in office. During the first campaign finance report that was due, I want to say last year maybe, he loaned himself a $50,000 for his campaign, which was the first time he had ever done that. Second round that he put in place, he raised around $13,000 from, various folks. So, I mean, he's got a lot.
That brought up
bulk.
A good question just then. You just brought up a real good question. What is the salary for a district judge? I mean, not judge, but district clerk. Yeah, what is the salary?
We're looking at around $187 a year. That's not including the car allowance, which I believe is like $15,000 for the car allowance. There's a bonus of like $5,600. They just passed this vaccine thing, right, where I think it's, if any of your members, get like additional $1,000. Now, here's the thing, right? They're giving the $15,000 car allowance, but Tarrant County has county cars and transportation, I think, that sit somewhere on a parking lot. I mean, you can mix that $15,000 car expense and just have during county time when you're doing, when you're at work, that the officials drive the county vehicles.
I'm sure there's, I guess what was coming to my mind, though, when you get that kind of salary for quite a while, it's easy to put $50,000 back in, too. You're just using taxpayer money that you got overpaid to finance your own campaign again, So, yeah, that campaign, I think we need a cap on it big time, like Florida, how much, I'd like to put it down there real low to make people work for these positions. And what's connected with my getting our right back to speak, don't even get anything in, these term limits or that, as far as locally, we're going to have to get council members in that are willing to do it. And all we're going to be able to do that is to get enough people involved to replace the council members. So that's where my whole trail goes to. First is get my right back to speak, get it at 7 o'clock. I told council, I said, you got your presentation, I'll move it to the bottom of the agenda. We've been down there. Move you down there for a while. And when, at the end, no one will be here, and you can go home early. You might have to show it.
Yeah.
You can just go home. But, they wouldn't dare. They just took us off, and they kept their presentation over top of zoning, so they get seen like, I call it the council celebrity hour, because each one of them do their little thing. But, but that's my whole, my strategy thing is to get back to there and reach, because you'll get people, when it comes to zoning, you get some very upset people, and they're getting screwed over. So you're liable to grow more support to start finding out how bad the city is, and that's why they took us out of there. And they took, and it, I know one reason why I was going to get to, I lost that, why it took them 5 months to rearrange our schedule, and they won't tell us who did that. I've asked Open Records, and we can't find out who did that. But, it took 5 months to do that because before doing that, all the council members were holding town hall meetings a few months before that, through that time there before that. And it came to me. The picture came together. They couldn't kick us out and then hold town hall meetings. And that's why I just wonder why it took 5 months for them to make this thing when I started talking to them. But they had all those meetings first. When they got to all their town hall meetings, then they released a new agenda and kicked us out of there. But anyway, that's my strategy. That's what we need. We need definitely, and I thought it would be good for term limits for his council. I think 3 terms at 2 years a term, and you know it's 24 months, three terms. I think is a good amount of time to get something done, and then step down for one, at least step down for one. And if you want to come back, I think it did a person good too to get their head cleared away from there. If they're really doing the job right. And then, you know, if you get another person in, that's, you know, I think, and open it back up again, but step down for one and let's see what happens or something. But, you know, I'm open to what the public agrees on to draw up and do, you know. But it all comes back to one thing. We're going to get people involved and change out the council members with people that will do the job like they should be doing it, you know. And I've got a nice little video I made for them. I'll be playing Tuesday night at City Council, so... you can go to their website or whatever, watch it or whatever, unless they can it or something. But anyway, but
now I'll tell you that with these term limits, right? You know, any movement throughout the course of human history, it's always taken just one person to stand up, and that one person can create and build an army. So if I'm elected into office, all these things that I'm telling you, I'm going to do. When it comes to lower this pay, I'm going to do that. And the taxpayers are going to see that. And who knows what they're going to demand from the others. When it comes to term limits, I'm going to say, you know, if I can get everything done that I need to get done in the first 4 years, then I'm done, right? But, you know, I'm smart enough to know that government is government, and government tends to go a little slow, so it may take 2 terms. But if I have to run for a second term to finish out what I promised, at the beginning of that second term, I'm letting folks know this is it. Someone needs to start getting ready to pick up the torch, because at the end of this term, I am done. So, you know, if people can see that, if people can see someone actually living up to their promises and doing what they said they were going to do for the people, they will demand that from the next person. So I think, you know, it's us. It's up to us. That's what our founding father said, right? If we've got a representative that's in place and we are not liking what they are doing and they're not working for us, it is on us to go in and vote them out. And, you know, getting the word spread, right? I haven't seen our elected officials go and do presentations at all of the high schools, right? The future, our future generations who are our future voters, but they are our future. And each one of them needs to see the elected officials go in and talk about what they do and talk about this county and talk about voting and just, you know, talk about America. Like the way that I grew up, you know, my dad was military and we were stationed in Germany and I went to school in Germany when the wall was up. And I was there when Ronald Reagan came and said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And the wall got torn down and I saw the East Germans come through. But us kids then, when we learned about, you know, reading, writing, all that, but we learned about American exceptionalism. And that's something that is lacking these days. And I think our future generation needs to see elected officials go in and talk about how great our country is, to instill that back into them and then educate them on voting and their rights.
Well, they can't do that, Larry. If they go out to a public meeting and get asked questions, they can't answer and they won't get elected again. So the way they stay in office is by not doing that. And that's what I'd kind of like to see change, you know. You know, I was on Carrie Hines' show the other night and the topic came up or something, and I thought it was a pretty good idea. We think about when you're running for office, maybe we are to demand some open town halls between the opponents, because there's so many run, but the other one side, the one that knows it's going to win, whatever has enough money, won't even show up. You know, I think it ought to be a rule.
Yeah.
Make them all get on the stage and come out. If you're not going to come out and answer questions, then that's number one. That's all I need to know. I don't need any more flags. Now, how can you vote for a politician? That's like buying a used car from a used car salesman without asking any questions. Just, you know, taking it, and I mean, really,
yeah,
not
and
to insult the used car
debate.
Salesman, but, yeah. but that's ridiculous.
No, I've been begging for a debate, and, you know, I've been begging for a debate, and I haven't been able to get a debate. Now, we've had a forum, right? But a forum's not
yeah.
a debate.
Oh, they're worthless. Free questions and stuff like that, yeah. they're really worthless. They are. We need an open kind of a town hall. Another thing that when I ran several times, so I'll be running again, but me and Raymond was talking about this too, is that not only will we have a an open town hall where to ask questions back and forth, or even when you go to a forum. I always, you know, I've asked
yeah.
before when I've gone to them, and I saw them, I said, can the candidates ask any questions? I've got about three questions I'd like to ask of other candidates. Okay? Why can't I never get to ask any questions? Every time I've gone and I've been on, you know, running, I've gone to some pretty, you know, some good sized forums, whatever, but we don't get a chance to ask any question. We get limited to what's given
yeah.
to us, and I don't like that. So I want it open up. And then I learned a lot about this last 8 years, how they got us shut down from everything. When I first ran back in 15, my plan was to rent the schools on the weekend. They're right there in the neighborhood, to reach out and paper the neighborhoods right there in the area and rent them right there and you know, take it right to the people. Well, 2 days before I was going to my event, they pulled a rug out from me and said, no, no, you can't. You're running for office. You can't campaign in a school. I'm thinking it's an empty school. It's a brick building, you know. And in matter of fact, they held voting things. So anyway, they took that away on purpose so that we can't do that, okay? And also, I thought, well, how about the community center? I couldn't do the community center either. I can't rent the community center and campaign in it. But I have to have someone else has to do it. They can rent it and invite us. Now my hands are tied to their, you know what I mean? I don't want my hands tied. I want to be able to just rent the building and use it that way. So they got all this stuff in place on purpose. You know, it's the lack of knowledge to keep people really dummy. There's a big old billboard up on 30. It says, well, now it says, welcome to the stock show or whatever. But before that, it said, welcome to Fort Worth, the modern West. Doesn't say anything about redistricting the city and adding two more council members. It's going to cost us $200. Doesn't say anything about that or finding out. Not a bit while that's going on right now. So the whole thing is a shutdown. And that's like I said, they took us off the presentation. So the whole key to everything is just fighting, giving knowledge out. They don't want knowledge out. We're trying to put it out, you know. And that's the whole war right there and trying to get more people involved. But you see why I stay quiet and let James talk. Because I get going, I got to change the decaf coffee. I talk too much. So, but, anyway, there. But, yeah, that's something I've got a big thing going on, though, until we can get this back. This is a battle that we can win and we can get it back. I just got to try to get people to understand the magnitude of what it was when they sat there and took our rights away to speak. You know, that did not benefit the people. You're taking our tax dollars and took our rights away to speak. And I'm just kind of amazed that more people aren't down there with pitchforks or yelling, you know. But I've got some that are kind of waking up, but more should be waking up, you know, to that, because they crossed the line. That just really crossed the line. That's our first amendment, the right to speak. And then the people that we elected in office to trust to run took our rights away to speak right here in Fort Worth, Texas. Mm-hmm. Like you was talking about, the battleground. This is Fort Worth, Texas. And, okay, our show's getting close to an end here. We can go on just a little bit further. What we do is lose the internet crowd when it cuts off, but the phone lines stay open, and there, we do have some listeners in, and we may close it up here in just a little bit. And I'll let James take over, and if you have anything more to say, and like I say, now, if anybody had any questions for our guests tonight, just press 1, and we'll be glad to bring you on. And if you got any questions for Larry, otherwise, we may get close here to wrapping it up. We'll go a little bit past this. I don't know if you can hear that woman telling us counting down the time, but we've got a few minutes after that, too. You got some more to say. So, James, you can take it back over, and I'm going to take my Geritol back out of the way here, okay?
Sure. I also want to take this time to remind everybody that if they want to vote in the March 1st primary, that tomorrow is going to be their last day to register to vote. Larry, I know you said that you didn't plan on running for office. If you don't win this race here, do you think we could see you run for another office again?
You know, there have been people who have called me about that specific question there. And you know, I don't know, right? Everything right now is in God's hands. I will say, here is my plan for the future. on what I really want to do. There are folks out there who don't know that they are conservative. Their eyes are closed and their minds are shackled. And we've got to find a way to break that cycle and show them who they are and where they need to be. So my goal, if I don't win this primary, is to create a group that is a boots on the ground. Our whole purpose is to go and convert. I grew up in the church. My dad was a preacher. And when it comes to Christianity, right, you just don't keep that inside and hold it in your own little group and just share it between each other. Nope. Your entire purpose is to share that with everyone you encounter, people who don't know about the graciousness and the goodness of God. I think that's the same way when it comes to conservative principles and policies, is to be able to share that with those who don't know how great it is or who have been misled into thinking that, hey, I shouldn't be that. There's a portions of our community right now where there are people that have said, look, they aren't even being talked to. The Hispanic communities, some of the Black communities, there are areas that aren't touched. And that's what I want to do. The whole purpose is when we bring someone in and they're there for our foot soldier and going out to spread the word, that their entire purpose is to go and recruit, bring that person in to help go and spread the word again. And I think that's the only way that we can combat a lot of what's going on the other side. You know, the squad, you know, the group of women that everyone knows, right? They preach this democratic socialism. But, you know, you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. So socialism is socialism. But for some reason, that is spreading. And I think it's spreading because what they're doing is they're hitting a message that no matter how wrong it is, they're hitting a message that is making people feel a certain way. And so they hold on to that feeling thinking that this is the right and proper way to believe that this country should go. And for us, it's a matter of combating that. And I think the best way that you can do it is to go into these areas, strip everything away, and just have the values that are there. And a lot of these folks, they grow up in church. They're very conservative. And if, you know, they go through these values and they start picking it, next thing you know, they'll realize that they're conservative. But it's like the same thing, right, with Christianity. Like if you want someone to come over and to Christ, you don't just say, you're going to hell. You got demons in you. Like you don't do that. But a lot of times, you know, when I talk about owning a lives, that's what we do. We just like come at them and just destroy them. But that's not going to make them want to come over and say, oh, well, yeah, you just destroyed me. I guess I am conservative. That's not going to happen. So you have to find a way to connect and figure out which key areas that you're good with. For instance, like I'm a big gun guy. I mean, I've got a nice little collection. And my wife had some friends who just were against guns. And, when they came over and we had them over and I was showing off my collection, they just weren't for it until I invited them to go shoot. And, you know, we go and shoot, and they just enjoyed it, loved it. It's like, this is great. And then, you know, you ask them, well, why didn't you like guns? And they couldn't say. It was almost like somebody told them that they shouldn't like guns, so they carried that. And it wasn't until they actually were able to put hands-on and tangible aspect and see that they're not bad. And especially in the hands of law-abiding citizens, we have our rights to have them. And then now, you know, the husband's like, hey, I want to get my first gun. Which one do you recommend? So we can do this. I just went a long roundabout way. So, yeah, that's my goal. But if the Lord is willing and the Lord leads me in the direction and says you need to do something else, then I'll just follow what God tells me to do.
Larry, in wrapping up here, what would be your elevator pitch to have somebody vote for you?
Well, I will say this. You've got two options here. You have someone who has been there for 27 years and is running again, and we don't know why, but he's running again. You won't get any change. You will still have the same outdated system. You will still have the same outdated policies, and you will still have the same outdated mindset. For me, I want to build on whatever success was laid down in the past. I want to bring us from the 20th century to the 21st century. I want to focus on taking care of the people. I want to focus on decreasing the salary. I want to focus on bringing in term limits. I want to bring us into the 21st century. And not only that, I want to ensure that the 15th largest county in the nation, the 5th largest county in the state of Texas, becomes number one in service to its citizens in this office. And so those are your two choices. You can have old or you can have new. You can have outdated or you can have updated. And hopefully you will choose the person who, one, has refused to mudsling in this campaign, who has refused to be divisive, and the one person who just wants to serve, and that's me.
Bob, do you have anything you want to say in closing?
Well, yeah, the only thing I got to say in closing is, Larry, I appreciate you coming on and the information and everything you share with us. I appreciate that very much. It's been educational for me. And before we get out of here, I'm going to do part of James's job here. Next month we have Tim O'Hara on the 6th. We have Brian Bradford running for – well, Tim O'Hara running for county judge. Brian Bradford running for county judge, too, on the 13th. We have Aaron Sourcewell running for lieutenant governor, and Taylor Mondick on the 27th running for a U.S. Congress spot, I believe, District 95. And that fills up next month there. And like I like to say is that check out our ad the first week of the month in the Fort Worth Weekly. It has our shows and information like that. And no, all I have to say is I appreciate Larry's time and the service he did for us in the service, and I like a lot of things he's saying there. And I've got Larry on my speed dial now, so if I need any money, I know who to call. And that. So I appreciate it very much, Larry, for your time and coming on here. And after the primaries, we'll see who's running for what and invite people back on then. So, James, you can close us out for there, okay?
No, I have nothing else to say. Just thank you, Larry, for coming on. Hopefully, even if you're not a candidate, we can get you back on the podcast just to talk to us sometime because you seem like you're an interesting person.
I appreciate it. Yeah, anytime.
Okay, thanks. And everybody, until next week, this is James McBride signing out. May God bless each and every one of you in the great city of Fort Worth, Texas. Good night, folks.
Good night.